The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Wide on the siren! Solomon Pickett, whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, jeez.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst. Higginbotham takes the mark, it's all too much for Leon. Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year. Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we've got the show that we promised. Sarah Brack, now friend of the podcast, she promised she'd come back when the AFLW team had their first win. They had their first win in glorious fashion and with a similar sense of triumph. Sarah's back. Welcome.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it was such a happy match. I think that was the main takeaway from it all. It was no stress. They won comfortably, and didn't the girls celebrate? And they really deserved it too.
Oh, look,
I'm not sure Purcell would share your assessment that it was a happy match. But yeah, but Shannon Freuden is beneath all of us, but. Watching the girls sing the song on the Geelong home ground, it did have a special poignancy.
It had a symmetry that another historic win came at Geelong's expense.
Yes, yeah, it was quite the unfortunate record banking up there against the Cats, but it went the other way for basically my entire lifetime, so I'm not taking my journo hat off and putting my Richmond hat on. I'm not overly concerned about banking some wins over the Cats.
So while we're taking a victory lap, I'd like to think that for a number of Richmond supporters, the first time they heard about Ellie McKenzie was on this podcast where you correctly tabbed her as the prospective number one pick. But I've had several conversations with people along the lines of, oh my God, she's going to be a star.
Yeah, she really is. And I think what's most exciting about Ellie is that she sort of signals what this competition will become. So obviously not everyone's going to be at her standard. Like, she's the number one pick for a reason. But she's played footy since she was 6, didn't have to stop. Obviously supremely talented, which helps a lot. But, you know, in 5 years' time, when we get more and more girls of that ilk coming through, it'll really take the competition to a whole new level.
One thing I thought, and this is very Richmond Tiger Talk core values because we're diving into a tactical discussion before we really talk about the game as a whole. But one thing I think about her game is it's really well suited to 16-a-side.
Yes, she's very dynamic, and she can really eat up a lot of space, as we saw with that run down the wing. That's something that I saw her do quite a lot as a 16-year-old for Metro in the under-18s. Just covers the ground so easily and can really break those lines, which is really important for W in terms of clearing congestion, because that can be a real issue just due to, you know, just physical limitations, unfortunately. When we're not quite as big and strong as the boys, we can't kick the ball quite as fast, so congestion can build up. So when you get players like Ellie to just, you know, bust games open, it's really exciting.
One thing I sort of like, I'm fascinated by the tactics of this team and how it's evolved. Like, I think you could see the Dome will almost start to break against Carlton. Then we were fairly strong favourites against Geelong. Like, it feels like this is the continuation of a trend, and it's sort of the team has reached a new sustainable level of high performance. Well, how have you been reading it with your taking off your Richmond fan hat, which we have, and putting your dispassionate, you watch every AFLW game. Is this a continuation of a much better Richmond team relative to its peers?
I'm not sure about. I'd be hesitant to say better relative to all its peers. I think Geelong are in a world of pain at the moment. That's just goes without saying. The Blues are also shaky as all hell. We've got a lot of problems with their slow starts. But I think what we've seen is that Richmond have significantly closed that gap. Like they started a long way behind the other clubs. Both themselves and West Coast were sort of on an equal tier, right down the bottom, way behind everyone else. So the fact that they've managed to close that gap so quickly is quite promising. I think we've seen more and more how important the addition of Harriet Cordner and now so Sarah Darcy. I think she's really settling into that half-back role, which we hadn't seen from her in AFLW before. She's been a forward for the Pies. So the two of them there have just sort of settled everything down, and it's allowed the kickstart of run that we've seen. Because, you know, I don't know how many people watched the girls last year, but quite often it would be just Mon, Conti just running round and round like a headless chook, trying to get some sort of overlap run going, and there was none. But we've seen that develop over the last few weeks in particular, I think.
I mean, let's be honest, it was not good watching last year. Like, we did it because we loved the club and we supported the team for all it stood for. But, yeah, this year it's just night and day. It's so enjoyable to watch this team.
Yeah, and I think it's really telling, quite obvious if you've watched Richmond men's closely, that Ryan Ferguson has come from that program. There seems to be parallels, but with a W twist. So obviously 16 aside makes things a little bit different as well. But those really, you know, strong intercept defenders, and then once it gets to about halfway down the field, it's just get the ball forward at all costs, try and lock it in. And I reckon they still need to tinker with that forward line setup. I think it's not quite right. It's not quite there. It will get there. But yeah, I reckon there are parallels. You can see the influence that Ferguson has brought across from the men's.
When you looked at the season stats, they were actually pretty much even for inside 50s before the Geelong game. So they were far more competitive than they were last year. Like, I just remember round one versus Carlton last year, it felt like the ball was parked in our defensive 50 for the entire game. So they've made the step up to competitiveness. And I think, yeah, you can see, if you squint, you can see the outline of what a good team looks like. And yeah, Katie Brennan being in the sort of form she's been in, particularly the last 2 weeks, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing you have to keep in mind with the girls is that this was their 11th game. Like, if we're talking a men's season, that's halfway through one season. But for the girls, it's one and a half seasons in, and that's 11 games. So that makes continuity really hard, especially without a VFLW season last year. Of course, everyone was in lockdown. So, you know, they weren't able to train up a new game plan or anything like that. So it's something that's going to take time. And then you look at the Carltons and the Collingwoods of the AFLW world, and they've been around for 5 years, and you can't buy that experience. So it's going to take time to really get some continuity and some confidence in that game plan. But we can see the outline of it now, and it's quite promising.
Now, Sarah, there is a serious issue I wanted to raise with you, and there's no – I can't sugarcoat it. Look, you know, your AFLW top 30 players is compulsory reading for any fan, but do you regret not having Brennan in the top 30 this year like you did the year before now?
No, I don't, because that top 20 was based on 2020 form. So it wasn't a forecasting, it was a review more than anything. And I don't think Katie's form she was concussed. She missed 2 games through concussion at least, and 2 out of 6 games, that's a third of the season. So unfortunately she couldn't be squeezed in there. But we're sort of seeing the form now that made Brennan one of the marquee players back in 2017, and she was signed as a marquee player for the Dogs. And she just has the ability to just break a game open and a really mobile key forward. And unfortunately, we haven't seen the best of her at AFLW level. So hopefully for Katie's sake, she gets some continuity into her body and we get to see more performances like we did on Friday night.
Yeah, I have to confess. I mean, I was only teasing, but I was.
You touched a sore point there, I think.
I was wondering whether it's something you get regularly. Like, I had no idea she was so good. Like I had sort of, based on watching every game she played last year, which as you point out was a limited sample, I was sort of suspecting she might be in the category of someone who the game's gone up a level, but she, surrounded by more competent game plan and teammates and having more opportunity, like she is, forget gender, she is one of the most lethal snaps on the Richmond team.
Yeah, definitely. She's a real instinctive goal kicker. I remember there's one that stands out that was like deep. This was back in her Dogs days, deep in the pocket where she'd been sidelined for quite some time. She's had a lot of trouble with her ankles, and she'd just come back and slotted this beautiful set shot. And you're sort of like, oh, wow, this, you know, she's a real talented player. And I think it's sort of now she's getting the supply, and now they seem to be sticking her forward for longer periods of time rather than that sort of quick try and, you know, oh, we need help in the midfield, put Katie there. Oh, now we need help forward, put Katie there. Like she's getting some continuity in one position on the ground, which can only help. And I'd throw Courtney Wakefield in there as well.
Oh, she's a star.
Getting a hell of a lot more supply. And it's a shame she's 33, but if the AFLW seasons continue with the length they are, hopefully we can get some longer seasons out of her too.
I think, and I'd be really interested in your views on this, like going to a two tall forwards, you know, it's more Richmondy, inverted commas, but I think that's made a big difference. It's created space and allowed the two of them to play more one-out football.
Yeah, for sure. I was initially surprised that they actually dropped Bernardi. I thought that was a really bold call, just because she's an All-Australian forward at her very best. She was All-Australian in 2018, I think, with the Pies. But she can be very inconsistent and she can struggle to get her hands on the ball. So hopefully she can build up some really promising form with the VFL affiliate, Port Melbourne, and come back into the side because plays more of a high, hard-running half forward and just, as you said, clear out that space for Brennan and Wakefield and Sabs rotating in and out of the ruck with Gabby Seymour.
Mm. Thinking about the team's improvement, I've been shocked at how quickly Tessa Levy seems to have acclimatized to high level football.
Yeah, you're not the only one. I was a little bit dubious about the selection, like the fact they only had three draft picks, so coming off a really poor year, and obviously, you know, number one Ellie McKenzie, no complaints, and then Tessa Levy to pull this basketballer out of nowhere. When most sides would sort of use that as a rookie, sign her as a rookie selection outside of the draft picks. And I thought it was a really bold call, but they've obviously been doing a lot of work with her, with Nathan Chapman, the skills coach there, and just sort of tucked her away. And she's landed on her feet and obviously a supremely talented athlete. You know, she's an Olympian, so you've got to have some sort of hand-eye coordination to be an Olympic basketballer. But she seems to be a real natural footballer, so they've done well there.
So would you, if you were to have had a bet at the start of the year, most unlikely person to emerge as a fan favourite, would sort of Gabby Seymour been high in your list of, because she's now a fan favourite, people love her. Has that been an unexpected and pleasant surprise for you?
Yeah, probably for me personally. I confess I didn't watch her closely enough last year. One of my mates is a mad Richmond supporter and he loved her. He loved what, you know, her work in defence, thought she was a real talented player. And for some reason, all I could remember were the mistakes she made. So I was like, oh, I'm not sure she's that good. But, yeah, just the joy that she brings to her footy, I think, is really, it's really heartening. And it sort of reminds you that, yeah, this is serious, this is an elite competition, but also it's something that women haven't had before. And to have that joy and that freedom to just run around and tackle and do something that was sort of not, you know, not kosher for so many years of our lives is really special. So, and I think fans have really tapped into that pure happiness that she brings to her footy.
It also brought Andy pure joy when she jumped over the Geelong ruck at the first bounce and put the ball down one of our midfielders' throats. And I didn't even have to ask him. I just knew that was his happy place.
Unfortunately, Asta's had a fair bit of footy behind her, Asta O'Connor, the Geelong ruck, and I think this year might be her last year. So, yeah, Gabby probably has a bit more of a leap in her at this stage.
Now, a not very serious question, but does anybody have a more enthusiastic goal celebration than Cody Jacks?
Cody's fun, isn't she? Yeah. She really feels like a Richmond player, speaking generically. I like the fact they've moved her forward. I think she's having a lot more of an impact there. She could be a real pressure player. And I think she was a little bit out of her depth in the midfield. Maybe not so much at VFL level. She'd be a perfectly competent midfielder there. But at AFLW level, she's a little bit undersized. But she seems to be having the time of her life up forward. And it sort of ties into what I was talking about with Gabby, that these girls just love the fact that they've got the opportunity to play. And I hope we, 20, 30 years down the track, I hope we never lose that.
I want to ask about a player I know very little about, but I've really enjoyed watching them play this year, which is, and I'm going to butcher the last name, so I apologize in advance, but Maddie Brian Katsiana.
Yeah,
I see, she's only 20, but there's something about her football that I really enjoy.
Yeah, so Maddie Brian Katsiana, I've had a lot of practice saying that one.
Thank you.
So she was quite a talented junior, sort of came through the metro pathway. I think she might have been Cannons, potentially, Calder Cannons. Really, really quick as a junior and sort of stood out for that outside run. And then she got drafted to Melbourne, who had at the time one of the strongest midfields going around, real senior core from those old Darabin days, Daisy Pierce, Karen Paxman, Elise O'Day. And she just couldn't crack it, to be perfectly honest. She was too young, too inexperienced compared to these veterans and stars of the game. So when she got to Richmond, it was her first taste of playing AFLW. So now we're seeing the second year in that she's much more confident and comfortable at the level just because she's had that year of playing under her belt as opposed to just sort of hanging around the edges at the D's.
Now, regular listeners to Richmond Tiger Talk will know that I tend to get obsessed about second rucks, and that is my life. But I was wondering about, Sabs has become a bit of a divisive figure amongst Richmond supporters because she gets the star billing every week in the social media and things like that. And I actually think she's quite a competent second ruck. Like, she's not perfect as a ruck person, but she does a lot of good things if your expectations are as to be a second ruck, to go in, create a bit of trouble. She did a beautiful tap in the first quarter against Geelong. Because she seems to be – she's playing less and less in the forward line. Do you think that's a role she would be comfortable in as her football evolves?
100%. That was her role at the Lions back in 2017, 2018. She was a dual Australian there playing as a forward ruck. They didn't have very strong ruck stocks at the Lions. Actually, it was quite similar to what Richmond do with that undersized first ruck. So it's something she's very comfortable doing. I like it because it gets her involved in the play, and I think she's a real confidence player. She can, when she's on, she can rip a team apart. She gets her hands seem to get stronger and stronger. She's harder to bring down, and her enthusiasm around the ground is really infectious. The last few years, I think she's struggled with her endurance as the competition has developed and evolved. But she's gone away and got herself super fit over this off season. Obviously, doing the SAS would have helped as well. If she can keep up that endurance as the competition continues to develop, I think that'd be an ideal role for her.
Yeah, I think I've just noticed, like, she reminds me a bit of that sort of the you see them in footy. She just the standard of athleticism has gone up in AFLW, so she doesn't have the speed to be a star anymore. But you know, judge her for what she is, not what the social media tells. You know, forget about the fact she's been on reality TV and just judge her for what she is. And she still can play a valuable role.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the fact she is so used so widely as sort of a marketing tool is because she's a leader at the club. She speaks incredibly well. She, you know, gets the girls on side and she's a really polished media performer. And she's still really young. Like she's... Let me bring up her age. Where are we? Sabrina Frederick. She's 24. So she's got loads of time ahead of her. So, yeah, as you said, just sort of judge on what we see on the field and not how the club use her in promotion and marketing.
So we've had a couple of pretty feel-good weeks. The betting line for this week's game versus North is... minus 24 points. Do you think it's going to be a bit of a reality check?
To be perfectly honest, I don't understand betting lines, but I'm assuming that's a bad thing to be minus 24.
But basically the bookmakers think they're quite likely to get flogged.
Yeah. I don't think they'll be flogged, but it will be a bit of a crash landing, I think. The Roos are really, they're in a bit of a perilous position on the edge of the finals. They're just in the top six at the moment. And they absolutely blew Carlton out of the water in the midfield. That was their real area of dominance last weekend. So the players to watch from a Roos perspective that the Tigers really need to be aware of are Jasmine Garner, Emma Carney and Ash Riddell. They're their three sort of, and Jenna Bruton. They're the four star midfielders who can just absolutely tear a game apart. But the flip side is that the Roos have been susceptible to outside run and pressure. That's how Collingwood and Melbourne really beat them earlier this year. So if Richmond can bring that, maybe they can unsettle the Roos a bit. But it looms as a danger game, that's for sure. It won't be quite as bad as last year, which was a complete and utter annihilation. But it's going to be a tough ask, I think.
Given that it's almost impossible to look ahead on a week-by-week calendar, I assume we have to play St Kilda at some stage. And surely that has to go better than it did last year as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not quite sure how the season will play out. Where, like, even my work roster, to have a woe-is-me moment, you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing each weekend until the fixture's released. So we're all just absolutely winging it. But the Saints have been really up and down this year. Adelaide really shut them down well with a really strong defensive performance last week, and they couldn't get any run going whatsoever. So they are susceptible to just totally, you know, to collapse in a bit of a heap. But then we have seen them in matches against Geelong and the Dogs just turn on this real free-flowing, high-scoring footy that we saw last year against Richmond. So it's a little bit of it depends on which St Kilda shows up. But I don't think it'll be a goalless performance, lose by 42 points again. And I think they'll have a real point to prove that, that you know, we're not standing for that again.
So, Sarah, you've been very kind with your time as always. Have you even had the headspace to think of how you're going to cover what feels like, you know, at least four or five AFLW games a week, and have the men's competition going in full steam ahead in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a bit of a step back from the men's while W's going on. So my lovely colleagues will help fill the breach there. So the ones to look out for would be Mitch Cleary, Riley Beveridge and Cal Toomey. They'd be the ones looking after Richmond stuff from an AFL perspective. Because as you said, absolutely no headspace whatsoever to be able to juggle it all. I saw glimpses of the practice match. I liked Hugo Ralph Smith's mullet. That's about all I can tell you from the from a practice match perspective.
Well said, though. It was a good point.
Yeah, there's a lot of mullet action going on in the practice game, the men's practice games that I've seen.
It's a real it's a weird trend in Melbourne at the moment, the private schoolboy mullet. I'm not quite sure where it's come from, but I think they took full advantage of lockdown to really get that shape into happening. But yeah, I'll realign my view once AFLW is over to get into AFL.
Well, it just makes such a difference, though. Look, I know you have to be dispassionate, look at all teams equally, but having a competitive Richmond AFLW team, it's just that they're really fun to watch, and they're sort of, as many people have pointed out, and I actually don't completely agree with this comparison, but a lot of Richmond supporters are getting 2011 Richmond vibes.
2011 from this team. Or 2010?
Well, 2010. I actually, with Mackenzie reminds me a lot of 2005, and Brennan reminds me a bit of Nathan Brown before the catastrophe. So, yeah, pick your own poison. But the point is that it's fun to watch the AFLW, and we're all really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I'm happy that Richmond are up and about from a fan perspective, but also so that the Richmond supporters can see what a like I'm totally biased drinking the Kool-Aid here, but see what a fantastic competition the AFLW is and how wholesome it is. It sort of, it feels like a really nice bridge between local footy and the big leagues, which can sort of feel a little bit not sterile, but you're sort of a little bit removed from it when you're sitting in the up the back of the MCG compared to cramming yourself in at Punt Road Oval or getting down to Witten Oval, which I think that's the best place to watch an AFLW game. So if the Tigers do end up travelling to Witten to take on the Dogs, I would highly recommend getting over to Footscray to watch that.
Mm. Ooh, I don't think it's quite as wholesome when Ellie McKenzie stiff arms the soul from another woman's body, but but it is fun. Sarah, thanks very much. For your third appearance, it's great to have you on in such happy circumstances. Yeah, and hope to have you on again, and good luck with the rest of the season.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah. So thanks again to Sarah Black. Always a pleasure. Look, I think we can go fairly quickly through the rest of the off-season news. I suppose the to start on a somber note, the very upsetting to hear about Royce Hart being in a car accident in Tasmania. So all the best to him and his family on the recovery. But some better news, I think, in Dylan Grimes and Dion Prestia are both re-signing.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, you know, as discussed, we weren't particularly surprised by this outcome. It was nice that Dylan signed up. I guess the most interesting, most bit of conversation was Dion's contract was quite long, mm-hmm. and it will take him through to when he's, what was it, 31?
31, yeah.
But look, I say this every time. I presume, that prima facie seems like quite a long contract for someone with a history of injury, but you don't know whether he took a discount to get a longer contract. So it's really hard to, until the AFL sort of starts making a rule where it releases contracts for people above $500,000 a year, it's really hard to analyze whether these contracts are a good or bad thing in isolation.
I think it's okay to err on the side of, well, he was best and fairest in the premiership year. You know, it's good. It could look ugly at the end of the year, but right now you've got to double down on what's working.
Well, it's very hard to second guess a management team that wins all these premierships, but it does great sporting teams hand out crap contracts all the time, but which in no way I'm suggesting has happened here, but it's hard to know, but it, Dillon, we said we did in fairness say there was a small chance he might leave. So you know, nice to have him locked down. I'm profoundly happy with Dillon retiring a Tiger, and if he gets overpaid in his last year, which again I'm not saying he will, I'm also 100% fine with that.
It's a good start. There's a lot of out of contract players to go. I think the two, you know, we mentioned them before, that there's a number of free agents left, most notably Nick Vlosten, but you know, there's others, like players who'll be coming out of contract, like Bolton, who, yeah, that won't be easy either. It's going to be a difficult year for the footy industry as a whole, and yeah, we'll be tested.
So 5% pay cuts across the board, and I think Bolton's the one to watch. He, in practice, his clients have turned out to be very loyal to Richmond, but Bolton is obviously managed by Ralph Carr, and he can often have protracted contract negotiations, so we say. I think on degree of risk, the Bolton one is the outlier, is the one to keep an eye on. But you know, I'm sure that will be played out in great detail and tedious length in the Herald Sun of the months to come.
So, while you know the upside of preseason is slow motion montages of people running around witches hats with guitar
generic
solos,
rock tracks,
generic soft rock playing in the background, the what can go wrong in preseason is a lot more tangible than what can go right, and so you're just looking to escape preseason without too many injuries. And I think that's going okay. We've had Prestia's in some doubt for round one with hamstring tightness. Lambert's had a few niggles, but probably should be okay. Riley Collie-Dawkins had a knock to the head, which kept him out of the practice game against Melbourne. But yeah, other than that, except for the long-term injuries to Soldo and Cumberland, it's a pretty thin injury list.
Yeah, and you know, there's some sort of the smoke signals about Prestia are reasonable. You know, I would say it's more likely than not he plays in round one. The smoke signals about RCD training the house down are quite strong. And you know, anyone who watched the practice game would have, I think it was Benny who talked about that, but definitely RCD's one to watch this year. Very shame he got that head knock. I doubt whether he'll play this Friday against Collingwood, but completely recognise this preseason hype, but my optimism about RCD, just based on what people I respect tell me, has gone up considerably. I haven't seen it myself yet, but the drums are beating, and you know, I was pretty much 9/10 out on him, and I've done a 180, and I've bought some futures. I've bought some RCD futures.
Now, because this is preseason, you can't have, you know, the months go by without the odd little irrational spasm of optimism. But there were a few people, me included, who got quite excited by the footage of Samson Ryan from the intra-club practice game.
Yeah, and like, I love the moment where Dusty's running through the midfield and Samson, I think he might have been called Samson in, because Samson sort of wakes up and starts running and gets a hand pass off Dusty. Nick, there's few things that certain life, but one I'm pretty confident is that Dusty in the open field, with plenty of options in front of him in the regular season, he's not hand passing to a ruckman.
Yeah, he'd stop and think, there's me, three-time Norm Smith winning player, and there's this lumbering 6'10" guy from the QAFL running past. Maybe he's a better option to kick it.
Yeah, nice of Dusty to do it. Nice of him to acknowledge the existence of the QFA Ruckman. But yeah, look, it's fun. And look, I know the internet drums have been beating, but I think I think it was pretty revealing who played second ruck against Melbourne, just what the club thinks. And for better or for worse, Marbier is still was sold out. Marbier is still getting first crack at that. Now just transitioning.
I think he's getting first crack at being second ruck, but I think
ruck forward, yeah.
Yeah, but I think Callum Coleman-Jones, who, you know, had some moments against Melbourne, would be the first choice for first ruck, if Nankwa wasn't available.
I think you're right, but we don't know for sure, do we?
No, and he's out for the first month of the season as well.
But yeah, it's certainly interesting. So on the practice game, Nick, one of my favorite podcasts, The Press Box, one of their pet things is the old guy still got it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty much the theme of, you know, we had no Noah Bolter moment where Noah Bolter 2 years ago where sort of a young up-and-coming player suddenly takes the game over for 15 minutes and we all say, oh, my God, how exciting was that? So there wasn't that. But, look, my favourite moments of the preseason of that game were Edwards still looking very sleek.
Playing the hits.
Yeah, beautiful roving goal. Jack looking sprightly.
That was good.
Roving balls at pace at his knees, which anyone as they get older knows that gets harder. So Jack is obviously feeling his body, which is great. And there was a really interesting moment in the second quarter where Koch just was hunting everything and going really hard at the ball. And I wondered whether that was a bit of a moment of sort of Koch realizing that the team was perhaps maybe taking it a bit easy in that moment, and you know, just sort of a lot of three-time premiership players on that field, you know, not necessarily feeling the need to go too hard in a preseason game. But I sort of almost wondered whether Koch made it a point, like he was hunting as hard for about a 10-minute burst. He hunted as hard as the final, but I wondered whether that was just a bit of, you know, just a bit of random Cochin leadership to say, hey, you know, get your head in the game. And we destroyed them that quarter. Like the second half wasn't as good. But yeah, when Koch switched on in the second, like, you know, we dominated the inside 50s and that's when we got up a big lead. So I just wondered whether that was a bit of random Cochin, not random, but like selective Cochin leadership to say, hey, you know, it may be February, lads, but, you know, you still got to take this stuff seriously.
Yeah, I got the impression that maybe Melbourne were a little ahead of us in their preseason. You know,
oh, that's definitely true.
They're maybe not planning for a 26 week season the same way we are. But yeah, look. Speaking of the young players, like they're, you know, if nothing truly eye-catching, I thought Ralph Smith and Will Martin both had moments.
I think the point about Ralph Smith is he was playing and both him and Martin were playing. They were playing in the ones and they were like, it was basically very close to the first 18 in playing, and both Martin and Ralph Smith got extended time with the ones. That in itself was a big compliment. I thought of the two, probably Martin looked more ready. Sort of in a Anthony Milesy kind of way that looked competent but isn't going to take the spot of Lambert and Dion weren't looking at that going, holy crap, I'm going to lose my spot this year. But they're he was solid and competent, did a lot of good things. Ralph Smith looked more high upside-y. You know, was quick. He had one beautiful down the line kick that hit a target. But he also did a lot more things wrong. Like he lost his feet in a few contests and gave away a dumb free kick. You know, nothing too bad. You know, all forgivable stuff. But I almost wonder whether Ralph Smith would have been great in the 80s. You know, as a flashing bomb winger running down the wing and, you know, kicking long. Exciting. But of the, you know, both of them look competent and good and something promising, but neither of them looked like they were going to be best 22, if that's fair.
No, but I think could they fill in a pinch? Yeah,
exactly.
And particularly Martin, I thought, yeah, he'd fit in. you know.
Yeah, maybe a better way to put it would be that'd be best 26 rather than best 22.
Mm, yeah. Someone who's not best 26 or probably not even, or certainly not best 30, I don't think. But Maurice Rioli Jr., you know, Jake Arts wasn't good enough to play in the grand final team, but he's, you know, he had a good game in the seniors, so he's obviously first in line for one of those small forward spots. But it's not just the name. Fans sort of who stayed on to watch the reserves, yeah, there was a bit of chatter about him.
Yeah, I think he looked really good. I think just like reading the tea leaves out of the club, he might be away from a senior game, but like the talent's there, right?
Absolutely. Nick,
there is one other thing I wanted to mention. Aside from, you know, I was like, Nank played really well. The Gorn Nank duel, it was a bit missy. I'm hoping we see a bit more of the other rucks. Not because I've got anything against it. Look, there was something in the practice game, Nick, where when I was watching. It was a point, I think it was in the second or third quarter, where Vlossy, Grimes and Asprey were waxing to each other. I was just saying, I've seen this so many times before. Like, I don't need to, in a meaningless practice game, I don't need to see this. But Nick, there were just a few points I wanted to make about the things you only see in your practice game.
Yeah.
Firstly, Dave Asprey, with his flashy new blonde haircut, didn't go down the line or with an easy switch and immediately led to another team's goal.
Yep.
I think that'll be the last time we see Dave Asprey be creative with his kicking, make a high-risk kick. Broad used his left foot and the ball went out of bounds on the full. Same thing with the right foot with Mabi Achol. So it was sort of like the things like, you know, that sort of that they would practice their wrong foot kicking all the time at training and the junior coach told them to do it. And then in the AFL, they never get to use it. But like this year, we've been practicing it extra hard and I'll pull it out in a practice game and it will go well. And then I'll use it in the, nah, it just, it like in AFL conditions, that's why sort of 80, you know, my pet thing is probably 80% of AFL players almost never use their wrong foot. Well, there's a reason for that.
Oh, look, it's good to have footy back. The women's team is far more fun, as we discussed. The men's team just starting to tune up. Round one, not all that far away. Footy's back, and it's pretty fun.
Melbourne in autumn, or Australia in autumn, it's a beautiful thing.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.